Chapter 59. London. With my financial affairs in order, I was now on the threshold of yet another adventure. This time, to travel to the other side of the world, to visit the Findhorn Foundation, with the intention of staying for a while. The Foundation, an international, non-denominational, spiritual community, is located in the north of Scotland, east of Inverness. I'd not visited the United Kingdom before, even though it was the homeland of my forebears. I left Sydney in late April, 1984. On the way, I spent a couple of days in Hong Kong, where I met up with the former licensee of the Kundiawa Hotel, located in the remote highlands of New Guinea. I'd once helped him out of a spot, during one of my many between-term holidays. He'd needed someone to supervise the hotel kitchen for a couple of weeks, and I'd been glad to oblige. The next stop was Dubai. It was dusk as we flew in, and the view from my window was unexpected. Scattered across a vast, flat, sandy landscape, I could see a number of enormous mosques, lit up like Christmas trees. Offshore, there were numerous oil tankers at anchor, waiting to load, also lit up. From the air, Dubai looked like a fairyland. Then on to London Gatwick, where friends met me. This was a major act of kindness as it was very early in the morning, and by the time we arrived to their basement flat, it was 4 o'clock, and I was whacked. The next afternoon, my hosts wanted to show me Kew Gardens, one of their favourite places in London. As it was a warmish day, we travelled up the Thames by boat, and returned on the underground train. As this was my first visit to the country my parents called home, I arrived with a longish list of places to visit, in addition to the must-see tourist haunts. I'd allowed myself 6 days in which to cover as much ground as possible, before heading north to Scotland. At the top of the list was a visit to the St. Osyth Priory in Essex. Why? Because I'm named for St. Osyth. Mary Melville St. Osyth Granger. To be honest, I've no idea why my parents decided to add her name to the others they'd chosen for me. Nonetheless, I was keen to find out more about my namesake. I discovered Osyth was a Saxon princess, a martyr, and a saint, the daughter of Frithwald, a sub-king of Mercia in Surrey and Wilburga, the daughter of King Pender of Mercia. Legend tells of a young Osyth drowning in a stream, and being miraculously restored to life by the prayers of St. Modwin and her nuns. Possibly as a direct result of cheating death, Osyth aspired to become an abbess, but, by virtue of her powerful family, she was a political pawn and too important to be sidelined. As a result, her father forced her into a dynastic marriage to Cyri, the King of Essex. The story goes that whilst her new husband was off hunting the elusive white stag, Osyth persuaded two local bishops to accept her vows as a nun. On her husband's return, he reluctantly accepted her decision, and gave her land at Chich, near Colchester, where she established a convent, and ruled as first abbess. She was beheaded by raiding pirates in 700 AD, because she refused to meet their demands. In my imaginary reconstruction of the scene, I fantasize that, when confronted by the pirates, she told them to bugger off. In an earlier paragraph, you may have noticed my full name, Mary Melville St. Osyth Granger, with no sign of Morley, the name I now use. Before going any further with the London story, best I clarify. Before I was born, my parents considered suitable names. For a girl, my father's top pick was Joan and my mother's was Polly. When the time came, they chose Mary instead. My mother and father, both bilingual, cosmopolitan, atheistic Brits, justified their choice, explaining that the name Mary had an equivalent in most languages. Maria. Marie. Mariah. Marinella. With the exception of New Guinea, which is where my mother and I went to live in 1960. There, the name Mary was problematic, because in the lingua franca, the word for a native woman is Mary. Well aware of this, before we left Australia, It was decided that my family nickname, Morley, would replace Mary. And lastly, my second given name is Melville, my maternal grandfather's first name. The name string now explained, let's get back to exploring. Day 2. Even though it was summer in the Northern Hemisphere, I was feeling the cold. So I splashed out and bought a U-Butte red Gore-Tex jacket, and a down-filled sleeping bag, good to 5 degrees below freezing, just in case I'd be camping out in the wilds of Scotland. Day 3. On the 1st of May, I set off on my pilgrimage to the St. Osyth Priory. I took a train to Colchester, a little less than an hour's run, then a bus through winding hedge-lined lanes to Clacton-on-Sea, and finally, a short walk to the Priory's impressive 17th-century gatehouse. Grateful for another sunny day, I wandered the grounds, first climbing to the top of the bell tower to take in the breathtaking vista of the low-lying land surrounding the Priory, the sea, and the Cone River estuary. On the ground again, I bought the information booklet, made a number of colored pencil sketches, and lastly, visited the chapel. It was an eerie experience I won't forget, particularly when I saw the stained glass window depicting St. Osyth and her husband, some 1400 years after her demise. I sat for a while, enjoying the stillness, at the same time contemplating my tenuous connection to this Roman Catholic woman saint, but no insights were forthcoming. As I continued to wander the grounds, the mid-afternoon stillness was suddenly broken by the sound of squeaky music, coming over the priory wall. Dead curious, I peered over, where to my surprise I saw the village children celebrating May Day in front of St. Peter and St. Paul's Church, with a carefully choreographed maypole dance. The information booklet confirmed the St. Osyth story I'd heard so often when I was growing up. After her encounter with the raiders, she walked to this church, carrying her own head. With this unexpected reminder of my namesake's demise, I felt my pilgrimage was complete and I returned to London. Day 4. I hadn't been in London long, but I already felt right at home as I whizzed around to see as much as I could. This day I began with the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. I thought of Christopher Robin, as I watched this enduring piece of royal pageantry play out. Then on to the Victoria and Albert Museum, to see an exhibition of John Constable's beautiful pencil sketches that he'd drawn some 250 years ago. Next, a fabulous exhibition titled 200 Years of Men and Women's Clothing, comprising bonnets, shoes, and underwear from the 18th century through to Xander Rhodes, a well-known contemporary British fashion designer. Then on to Westminster Abbey, where I saw the magnificent sarcophagi of Plantagenet kings and queens, and, glancing down, I noticed remembrance floor plaques, worn down over the centuries, by the footsteps of the faithful. Day 5. I had invested in a Brit Rail pass, and, determined to get my money's worth, I took a train south to Exeter and Plymouth, on the shore of the English Channel, just to say I'd been there. Day 6. This was my last day in London. I'd had a wonderful time being a tourist, but now I needed to focus on fulfilling the purpose of my journey, to travel north to Scotland, and meet the folk at the Findhorn Foundation. On reflection. Dubai by night. The combination of mosques on land, and oil tankers at anchor in the Persian Gulf, struck me as a perfect example of faith and commerce intersecting. My string of given names, Mary Melville St. Osyth. I've occasionally wondered why I was given so many unusual names. Could it have been because my parents, both transplanted Poms, wanted to remain connected to their homeland? But I've been known as Morley ever since I was 12, when we moved to New Guinea. Before we left Australia, Morley was my nickname in the family. To explain. My brother was 12 years older than me. When I was born, he was tagged Biggie and I was Smallie. When I started to talk, I dropped the S, and called myself Morley. St. Osyth Priory. It was important for me to make the pilgrimage to Colchester, because I was keen to know more about my namesake. Afterwards I knew more, and since then, still more thanks to Wikipedia. Over the years, I've grown to accept my tenuous connection to this woman, and I wonder what she was like as a person. From the various references to her life and work, I've concluded that thanks to her personal conviction, she managed to sidestep the societal expectations of the time, to pursue her calling. Some 1400 years on, I feel I've chosen similarly, also sidestepping marriage, to follow a road less traveled, that of a narrative visual artist. Facts. Saint Osyth. Legend has it that Osyth, Osgith, or Osytha, was involved in various fantastical events during her lifetime. They included drowning and being revived by prayer, being beheaded, and with a spring, rising from the ground where she fell, picking up her head and walking to the door of the local church, where she knocked three times before collapsing. And lastly, her ghost, carrying her head, is said to walk the priory walls one night each year. A beheaded saint is known as a Kephala IV. In Christian art, placing the halo for a Kephala IV offers a unique challenge for the artist. Some place the halo where the head used to be, and others have the saint carrying the head along with the halo. The Saint Osyth Estate comprises over 6,000 acres and represents 1,400 years of recorded history, myth, and legend. The estate contains 22 separately listed buildings, monuments, as well as protected parklands and gardens. Fortunately, the successive owners haven't sold off parts of the estate to pay for repairs or grand additions. For some years, the estate has housed a nursing home and retirement accommodation. Religious associations, other than the chapel, appear to be a thing of the past. John Constable was an English painter in the Romantic tradition. He is best remembered for revolutionizing the genre of landscape painting. Westminster Abbey is an Anglican church in London, formerly named the Collegiate Church of St. Peter at Westminster. Since 1066, it has been used for the coronations of 40 English and British monarchs, is the burial site for 18 English, Scottish, and British monarchs, and is the setting for at least 16 royal weddings since 1100.